It's one thing to be given a robe, but to be harshly punished for not having a robe? Why? Welcome to The Good Word. Our theme for this week is the wedding garment, based on a story Jesus tells in Matthew 22. My conversation partners are Paul Dibdall and Dave Thomas from the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. Let's take that question. Graciously given a robe, but if you don't take it, you're tossed out. Why can't we let something be, why can't it be more gentle? Simply say, well, if you don't want it, that's your choice. But if you go to Matthew 22, and the story here, and I'll just quickly summarize it, man's having a feast, and he sends word out, and the people who go, they're not ready to come. They've got all kinds of mistake, all kinds of excuses for it. So they go in the highways and byways and force people to come in. When they do, everyone's there. They've got a wedding garment, but there's one man who doesn't have a garment. I'll just read those punchline here. But when the king came in to see the guest, he noticed a man there who was not wearing a wedding robe. And he said to him, friend, how did you get in here without a wedding robe? And he was speechless. Then the king said to his attendants, bind him hand and foot and throw him into outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen.
So I read this as a consequential thing, Alden. In other words, that there are simply some facts about life in this world and eternity that are the way they are. And that if you're not on the inside, you're on the outside. There's no place in the middle. I don't know if that helps you any.
Paul, what's your explanation for that?
Well, ask the question one more time.
Well, why is it, you know, it's a gracious gift, robe, free party and everything. But if you don't wear the robe, weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, yeah. You get tossed out.
Yeah, the image that comes to my mind, I think of as a teacher, this isn't an exact match here, but I'm thinking of the emotions that I feel as a teacher. If I give an assignment which is extremely difficult and someone comes and I just give a short amount of time for that assignment to be completed, when someone comes the next day and says, I didn't have it completed, my reaction is quite different to that student than if I've laid out for them exactly what needs to be done. I've provided them every answer, and I tell them tomorrow I will be asking you these five questions, and here's how what I'd like for you to know. The student that comes back without having made use of the gracious provisions that I've offered, that says something rather significant about that student, it seems like to me. They probably shouldn't be in the class. I don't know. Does that help? So here you've been invited. You've been provided with all that you need.
Including the solution.
Yeah. And you still, you, it's a disrespect to the owner of the banquet. It's a, to just simply ignore all that has been provided. That's a serious offense and is dealt with seriously.
Okay.
So there.
Now, in this same cluster in Matthew, there are a couple of other stories with tough ones. I mean, this, I presume we would say that the wedding garment provided here is an illustration of grace.
Mm-hmm.
That safe to say? If you go back a couple of chapters, chapter 20, for example, you have the laborers in the field that all got paid the same, whether they came early in the morning, midday, or late, they all got paid the same. And the ones who they paid, first of all, the ones who came late, gave them a day's wage. Well, there were visions of grandeur in the minds of the early ones. Wow, yeah. This guy gets a full day's wage. What are we going to get? They all get paid the same. Now, in this case, there is no vivid penalty. There's just the grumbling. So, but it does illustrate the point of grace.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of reaction do you get from your students to that parable?
Well, people who keep statistics on parables will tell you that that's the least favorite parable. People dislike that one more than any other one. It violates their sense of fairness.
Have you had any experience with reactions to that, Paul?
Yeah, no, just an echo of what Dave has said. It does. It violates our sense of fairness, even though technically those that worked all day were treated fairly.
Yeah. Let me tell you what I've discovered. I have a whole cluster in one class where we deal with a bunch of parables to illustrate whether it's the divine initiative or the human initiative. For example, the lost treasure, I mean, the treasure discovered in the field, or the pearl of great price. clearly emphasize the human initiative. We've got to do something. Go out and buy it, okay? And the prayers of the unjust judge and the midnight friend, that also emphasizes human initiative. But this one clearly emphasizes the divine initiative. In contrast to the parable of the talents in Matthew 25, where they all got paid according to their works. See? Well, after we get through with this cluster of parables, I then ask everyone to think in their own experience which of the parables we found most helpful and which ones they found least helpful. One vote. And we do it by show of hands, so it's not secret ballot. But the first time I did this, I was astonished because 8 students said this particular parable. No, it wasn't 8, it was 6. Let's be precise here. 6 students out of 40 said that one was the most helpful of all of them. 6 other students, same class, said it was most troubling. And I think this gets into maybe a bit of the tension in the Calvinist free will tension. You know, those who want divine initiative, it's up to him. We don't have to pay for it. As over against those who say, no, we want to meet the challenge ourselves. So I'd be interested, Dave, if you know where any of those statistics, because my experience has been, although this year it was 8-4, 8 found it, 4 found it most helpful and 8 found it the least helpful. So the capitalists kind of win out today.
I can only tell you that I read it in a book some years ago, so okay. I don't know.
Okay, good.
But, you know, I guess the point here, Alden, in this parable is that the fact that the guest didn't put on the robe and was thrown out does not determine what the outside is made of. In other words, outside is not determined by the person who held the banquet and invited people in. Outside has its own makeup. It's the way it is.
So if you're not inside, then you're out. Whatever's out there.
That's right. Yeah. You're out there, and whatever constitutes outside is your lot. And so the weeping and gnashing of teeth is not, I mean, I don't see that as the consequence of the wedding.
Yeah. Could we say here that, and I could use a marriage relationship here, if it is really important, then it matters whether I come home at night. Now, I wouldn't respond very well if my wife said, you better come home or else. That wouldn't work well. But I don't think I would work very well either if my wife said, sure, it doesn't make a difference whether you come home or not. Yes. See, there are serious consequences whether or not one accepts God's way.
And see, I like to look at the other side of the story, not the punishment side, but the fact that by accepting the gracious invitation and the garment, this person is redeemed from the outside, that they are invited into a place that presumably is warm and friendly, and there's good food, and there's happiness and joy and all those kind of things. And this invitation is as a result of the graciousness of the person who had the wedding. There's no, I earned my way in there.
There's another aspect, and there are, in fact, several other aspects of this particular parable, but are you prepared to make anything out of the fact that the man, when he was accosted, was speechless?
Yeah, there's no defense. When you've been provided with everything and you still don't make use of it, how do you defend yourself?
So if you make this a metaphor or a paradigm of redemption, I guess those who have not availed them, the conclusion is those who have not availed themselves of the provisions of salvation as they are found in Jesus have really nothing they can say.
Yep.
Now there's a load of freight to think about or to carry.
Now, the other interesting piece in this story, the initial invitees who simply made excuses and didn't come. These were the privileged ones who should have come.
And they were fairly lame excuses.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Oh, and it's the king who invites them. I mean, this is not an invitation that you turn down. It's just it's an astonishing parable.
And it was a wedding for the king's son, the crown prince. Wow.
So actually a rejection of the invitation in a sense is an insult.
Oh, absolutely. It's an insult. And just when we think that's sort of been, that insult has somehow been overcome by the graciousness, continued graciousness of the king, then we have the man who accepts the invitation but then doesn't make use of the provision.
Well, in fact, there's some pretty tough stuff in the middle here, verse 5. But they made, these are the ones original invitees, made light of it, went away, one to his farm, another to his business, while the rest seized his slaves, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged. He sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, and burned their city. Then he said to the slaves, "Wedding is ready, but those invited were not worthy. Go therefore into the main streets and invite anyone you find to the wedding banquet."
Hmm.
Now that's a pretty potent thing too. This comes back to my original question. We may not be able to solve it today, but you have a wonderful gift, but the consequences are enormous and they're tough.
Yeah, but again, Alden, I don't think that those consequences are prescribed by the king necessarily. In other words, if the king is active in giving you the invitation on the garment, it doesn't mean the king is active in creating ugliness outside.
True, but let me press from a pedagogical point of view. You know, I will use last verse in 1 Corinthians 4, where Paul says, "Shall I come to you with stick or with love and spirit of gentleness?"
Mm-hmm.
Most of my students, when I, you know, if they're falling behind and stuff, I just quietly say to them, "You want me to come to you with love or stick?" Most of them would say, "Oh, no, no stick, please." But I do have a steady sprinkling of students say, "Hey, Thompson, I need the stick."
When it's a life and death situation, though, that deserves a shout. That deserves a scream. If someone is headed for the cliff, you don't preface your comment with, "Excuse me, sir," but you are, you know, you're scream at
yourself.
Them.
Yeah.
And this parable is that kind of shout.
Yeah.
These are serious issues that are at stake here. Don't miss the point.
See, that's why I think with Jesus, he's very gentle personally, but he tells stories with dynamite for those people who will only respond to dynamite. And I think that's important. Sometimes,
or to overcome inertia, perhaps.
Yes. See, there's some Christians, I think, who are just too gentle and don't plant the dynamite when it's needed, see, or don't shout loud enough when the cliff is hit. Thank you, Dave and Paul, for your help with our discussions this week. Next week, we are going to talk about more clothing imagery, a cluster of ones from the story of Jesus. My thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in for the Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.